bits and pretzels inspire you.
You will figure it out.
This is clearly the place to be.
Servus, everyone. This is Britta Wedling, Editor-in-Chief of Bits and Pretzels. I welcome you to a new episode of our podcast. Sustainability is a buzzword these days. Do good things and talk about it became the mantra of every business leader and startup CEO. But the approaches vary dramatically from companies working honestly towards changing their business model as well as the world for the better to those not having the most authentic sustainable approach or even providing misleading information about their not so green efforts. So how do investors and entrepreneurs know whether a company's business is really sustainable or not so much? This week's guest is on a mission to tackle that exact problem and to get more financial resources to founders who really deserve it. And his name is Omar Salem. He is the CEO of Arabesque Group, a VC firm that's focusing on sustainable investments. And he shares insights into building an artificial intelligence that finds better startups, including yours, if it's really sustainable. Servus, Omar Salem. Welcome to the Bits and Pretzels podcast. It's great to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much, Britta.
So you used to work in traditional banking for a long time before you started Arabesque in 2014 to build an investment company that's focusing on sustainable investments. Why did you figure out that was necessary in the first place?
Well, as you said, I worked 20 years in the industry, a usual suspect. So I worked in global markets, and I always had the hunch that finance will be significantly disrupted. Basically, it's the next industry to change. And like with the car industry, you have two major disruptors, non-financial data on the one side and artificial intelligence on the other side. We all can see and understand how this will change the entire finance industry. So I think that was the main reason. So I invested and I researched basically the sustainability space, and I understand what impact that can have. And I tried to understand AI and how this will change finance. And basically, I brought them two together in the company Arabesque.
So were you just fed up with the traditional investment industry, or was it like a special moment where you thought, well, okay, now I have to get out of the UBS and Morgan Stanley's of the world and build my own company? A lot of entrepreneurs in our audience would be interested in this special moment.
Yeah. Now, there's perhaps two components and two different routes one can take to come to that conclusion. And one is the inefficiency or the issues that we find in finance that haven't been really changed despite the various crises that we've seen. So basically, there's an inherent need to change the way how finance is operating.
You mean like Lehman and the financial crisis,
exactly.
The collapse
of the markets? Basically, finance has basically a greater role than just providing money or giving advice or like this. If you can implement into finance and financial decisions a different set of values, where it's not just about returns or volatility or Sharpe ratios, whatever, but also how is this money generated? At the expense of child labor, corruption, pollution, or is it produced in a sustainable way? If you can implement that into the financial decision-making process, it has a huge scalable effect. So as we are trying to tackle the challenges of society in climate change or poverty or human rights, we go the route of policy and politics and media. But we're not getting that far. And really, finance is an incredibly powerful tool because you can basically recalibrate it and it has an enormous impact.
Interesting. You know, today, not only over the last couple of weeks, but obviously also last year when the great Greta Thunberg movement started, everybody was talking about climate change and green tech. But there was certainly not so much the case in 2014 when you started your company. How did you come to the conclusion at that time that it was worth taking the risk to go into that relatively new investment area?
Well, I guess the people who have been involved in this for quite a while knew this issue, although it hasn't become a mainstream topic yet. But the challenges have always been very clear if you just, want to look.
Right.
What really sparked my interest is the availability of non-financial data on one side and AI on the other side. And don't forget, they have a symbiotic relationship. You need the one to manage the other. You need AI to understand non-financial data, basically to push back the background noise. And you need the data to train the models. And these two things really have only become available basically in the last 10 years. And now there's a completely new instrument set to take financial decisions. And that's basically what I'm focused on.
So you mean like the advancement in machine learning, data management made it possible to build a business model that you've built with Arabesque and that kind of accelerated over the last 10 years, right?
Exactly. So on the AI side, basically, it's not just the model. The theory has always been clear, but basically to generate the computational power on one side and the capacity to process huge amounts of data on the other side, that's one topic. And then the availability of non-financial data. So basically, ask yourself the question, if I look at the company's performance and sustainability, can I understand its stock price movement or its credit spreads better or not? That wasn't possible basically 10 years ago, but now becoming more and more available. We can now find a correlation, not the causality, but we understand the correlation between sustainability and stock price performance, for example.
That's interesting. When I looked into your company, you obviously look at different sources of data, as you mentioned, not only financial data, stock performance. Where do you find all these data that you base your assumptions on?
That is the holy grail, is exactly that. At the moment, I'm afraid a lot of the sustainability assumptions and conclusions that we take are founded on not consistent data. So particularly when you look at climate change, so when you look at about 20,000 data companies, then about 80% is just estimates. It's just model-based. It's not real data. Mm-hmm. It's a huge flaw in the system. So we try to tackle that by, collecting the data ourselves and the evidence of that. B, we use machine learning to find the data in the internet. And three, we have a very strong tool to request the data from companies directly. And the key thing is not just ring-fence the data and sit on them and sell them, but to make them available to everybody in a transparent and fair way. That's really what we are trying to achieve, basically taking sustainability to the mainstream to allow everybody to take sustainable decisions. That's the mission of Arabesque.
Let's talk about how things have changed now. Why are sustainable companies so interesting for investors right now? And how large is the market for sustainable and green tech businesses based on your assumption as an investor?
So to me, it's the mainstream. Once you achieved a certain quality or efficiency, there's no turning back. You don't want to go back to fossil fuel-based engines or stuff like that. So the challenge is obviously in the sustainability space is the pure definition of sustainability. So you ask me, you know, what is special about those companies? The point is that we define sustainability different. And one of the most important things is that we allow people to decide themselves. So it's really about transparency. In other words, if you say, I don't want to be invested in, let's say, a tobacco company, a company that's involved with fossil fuels,
right?
Then you should have the right to know. And then you can take your decision yourself. Might you be a retail investor or family office, institutional investor, or government? You should be able to know. And that's what we're trying to achieve. And that's basically the key thing.
What, you know, I think that's like kind of interesting because when you talk to, I don't know, every second company, every second startup even thinks it's sustainable and does like talk about the fact that it's carbon neutral. What's your standard on sustainability and what parameters are you looking into that are really reliable and that you can really make this judgment on?
So the best way to look at it is if you look at this in three dimensions. So basically three components of sustainability. Number one is what's called the normative values of the UN. These are the most fundamental rules of our society, which means that we do not get involved in anything about a breach of human rights, labor rights, environment breaches, and corruption. So as long as a company does not bribe to get its business, does not enslave other people to generate products and services, respects working rights, and treats environment in a way that it does not excessively produce externalities, then, you know, then you're above the main threshold, the first threshold, if you wish. If you're in breach, it doesn't matter who you are, what you are doing. You lose your license to operate, basically. Mm-hmm. And the next two are very simple. It's just a question, what is a company doing and how they're doing it? So your one question is, are you involved in maybe controversial businesses? So I mentioned alcohol, weapons, tobacco, gambling, adult entertainment, or whatever the business might be.
Again, but how do you know? I mean, you can just pretend to, I don't know, develop a certain technology for, I don't know.
That's very simple. That's really simple. You do look at the revenue stream because you don't go by industry classifications. So take a luxury good maker, and the majority or big chunk of their revenues, maybe it's from tobacco, alcohol or stuff. Then, you know, you just look at the revenues. And again, it's not about criticizing a company. It's not about discriminating a certain service, just making you aware of that. So if a company is basically generating revenues from fossil fuel, then we can find this out. We know this. And in fact, we can also know if it's what we call scope 1, scope 2, or scope 3, which basically is the various circles around that business. So is it just a company or the company and its supply chain? Mm-hmm. Or is it also including its investors or its consumers? So you don't just look at the company itself. You just maybe need to look at the whole ecosystem of company to come to a fair conclusion. But to answer your question, the main point here is, where do the revenues come from? And your one investor might like nuclear energy and one might not like nuclear energy.
Right.
It's perfectly fine. The point is just to create transparency to empower the decision-making process. That's one question. And there's thresholds. So basically you have 1%, 2%, 5%, 10% threshold. So if Lufthansa, for example, would sell tobacco on a flight, it doesn't make them a tobacco company, but it's a tiny fraction of their revenues. You can say, look, I put a threshold in there. As long as it's below 1%, I don't care really, or 5%. Or, but you might say, look, at 10% above, I don't like it anymore. So there's a mix of revenues that you want to look into. And that's one dimension of it. And let's be clear, every exclusion will cost you money as an investor. So every industry that I take out, that I prevent, will reduce the optionality, and in a comparable situation will cost me slightly money. So maybe if I take out tobacco company, which make, you know, solid revenue, it might cost me about 10 basis points per year in my portfolio. And I can say that's fine, or no, actually, I want to keep the revenues. So that's one way of looking at that. The other way is, how is a company actually operating? How are they going about, let's say, water, energy, wastewater management, health and safety? How are they treating the people? How is the governance structure and so on?
Interesting.
Yeah, in a way, it's an extension of a fundamental analysis. You know, we grew up to learn to analyze financial information, to take financial decisions. But now we're learning to integrate non-financial information into that decision-making process. And now what I can do is actually can go and search if the way our company deals with wastewater management is really sophisticated compared to its peers. Mm. Does it generate more revenues for the company? And here the fundamental topic is how to conclude what is material. So you're going to figure out what element in the production process is material to the revenues of the company. So don't look into accidents, let's say, in a software company, because normally people don't have accidents. But you want to definitely look into accidents when it comes to mining company. You want to see what's the health and safety policy there. So basically, you've got to figure out what is material to that company or that industry.
I think that's really interesting. This, you know, seems very complex, and I think, you know, every company has some dirt under the rug. So how many big investment targets are there for your investment fund? Certainly, I know many startups, let's say like Tomorrow Bank or others, Planetly, who build dedicated business models based on the idea of having a sustainable business model and you know, the idea of green tech and doing good. But I feel like the legacy companies didn't really take that in consideration when they built their companies like, you know, 10, 20 years ago. So how many big investment targets for your fund are there in the market?
That's a great question. And it's a fair question. And you're going to be surprised when I say the answer is unlimited. Because the truth is that, as you say, companies are basically operating in the legal and economical system that they operate in. And, you know, it's we look at this as a journey. It's like, what do we help to become a better company? What do we help to tackle these challenges that maybe were ignored or not relevant, you know, some time ago? In fact, many corporates would argue that they were not allowed to behave in what they would have called inefficient by considering non-financial aspects. But now we live in a different world. We understand the retail, the investor, the policies, everybody's changing. So now the question of transparency. So what we want to assure is that a company that is just transparent about the situation, that, yeah, we have maybe big problems, but we enter a journey to fix them, to become better. That's what we want. It's not about the squeaky clean company. In fact, I'll be always suspicious. And it's not about just applauding whoever's up and down, you know, damning whoever's down, but to have companies to go on this journey and become better. And from a finance point of view, from a revenue point of view, it's actually the better deal. If you can invest in a company that's going on a journey, you're probably going to see better returns over time instead of investing just whoever has an image of being particularly sustainable.
Just to give us an idea of how a certain company on that path toward being more sustainable looks like, can you give like an example of a company or companies that are especially sustainable in Germany maybe, or like even in the US?
Yeah. So rather not mention, obviously, any single names, but I can talk about industries and groups. And what is really important is to look through the greenwashing. That is right. The obvious problem that, you know, you can, let's say if you're a mining company and, you know, you have a bad reputation on human rights, then you can just go and buy, you know, some human rights policies and have them polished and go to conferences and have some fancy photographs taken and the kind of right. Things just right. Ignored. But you really want to look into the facts and the data. Okay, so how many human rights breaches have you been found guilty of? How many people have suffered? How many fines have you paid? How many factually, quantitatively accessible issues? How many headlines in news have questioned your human rights behavior? That's what you can monitor. This is what you can measure. And then you can basically start seeing what the progress is.
What about, let's say, an Amazon on the one hand being like a big logistics company, on the other hand, Jeff Bezos announced a huge green tech fund. What about these guys?
So I guess it's difficult for all of us to really have a close look at what's going on there. And mm-hmm. And I think it requires some humbleness to, first of all, you know, accept that these people have achieved commercially incredible stuff. I mean, you know, we all complain about Amazon, but we all use Amazon because, particularly in COVID, we're glad the packages come to us rather than we having to go out and shop.
Yeah, it's an amazing run and an amazing job they do, obviously. Yeah for so, sure.
And with that, obviously, comes huge, let's say, labor right issues, questions. You know, how do you deal with these people? And we all, you know, see how these guys who deliver and pack and stuff, you know, are hassled and whatever. So, as long as you follow, you know, good processes and you basically respect the human element in all of this, that's one thing. If you want to talk about, you know, what it does to the retail outlets or small shops on the street, that's a very different discussion. I think it's not about sustainability, it's about basically a change in economy that is a much bigger topic. So obviously we want to differentiate if these initiatives are true or not true, if they help or they don't help. But the beautiful thing, what I love about sustainability, it's all about authenticity. You got to be real about it. And yes, you can pretend for a little while, but that doesn't take you. And I think there's some great initiatives by, in fact, by Amazon by Bezos, which are great, which are just, you know, amazing. But that doesn't neutralize issues that we might find in the production process of such a marketplace. So I would always just take separate views, give credit to what's good, and try to improve what's bad.
Right. When you think about all the entrepreneurs that you talk to and the entrepreneurs that are clearly in our audience and listening to this podcast, what kind of changes do you see in the industry? And you know, where does it lead us in terms of, you know, entrepreneurs building more sustainable green tech companies? Do you see much change there from your, you know, investors' perspectives? Do you see, like, I don't know, a boom of sustainable businesses?
I definitely see a pickup in sustainable business, whatever that might be. Obviously, you know, organizations trying to cater to the demand of consumers. That's always true. But, you know, the truth is that big companies are brand trapped. So think about McDonald's. We all understand their business model, and it has served people arguably well, you know, to have a meal for not so much money. But then the point is that the taste changes. People suddenly want something healthy. People say, oh, I want a burger. It's all not healthy in the Coke. It's just too fat. I want something, you know, that's better for me. And then, you know, McDonald's tried to put a salad in the fridge and say, hey, why don't you have a salad here? But truthfully, people don't care. People don't want that. Mm-hmm. You have this authentic feeling of having a salad. And then basically you go around and you find all these salad shops and you can go in there and they can chop it and make it exactly the way you want to. And it's a comparable price tag, and then you're happy. And that's basically what we're seeing in our space, where basically the big finance organizations, you know, big car manufacturer, whatever, you know, they're brand trapped because they stand for a certain business model. And then the consumer says, actually, I want something different. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult for these big companies to adapt and be authentic. I mean, they obviously try, but the question is, you know, is it a true change or is it not? And that's what the consumer picks up, and that's how you can decide. And for all of us entrepreneurs, that's the greatest opportunity. It's just be authentic, whatever your idea is. You know, don't try to basically be something that you're not. You know,
right.
Just be cool, be straight, just go and do it and try your best.
So when I think about the time that I spent in California covering technology there in Silicon Valley, what always, you know, really astonished me was the fact that on the one hand, the whole technology industry and the investment industry is based on data, numbers, and facts, and assumptions, and strategies. And then on the other hand, you have this investor who says, well, I just feel that this business model and this team is going to make it. The point I want to make here is that you see that changing, and I think your company is a good example of that. You do more investments based on numbers, dates, and figures, and not on a certain feeling or like something like the team. Do you see that this is like a major change in the investment industry right now?
No, I don't. I think there's a natural evolution. So basically, we have active chosen investment decisions, either based on your experience or your data or your fundamental analysis or technical or computers, whatever it might be, and everything is fine. That used to be one thing. And as we have better technology, as data is becoming more and more available, we naturally will evolve towards a more autonomous investment process that's based on the integration of all kinds of data, so financial and non-financial data, and the use of machine learning to come to quick and efficient decisions. That's one thing that's true everywhere in the world. I think what makes California unique or other parts of the world is this very entrepreneur spirit that's behind it. So basically a desire to say, oh, screw this, I'm just going to invest here. I just feel this is going to go. Mm-hmm. You know, this gut feel, this risk appetite is not a function of your investment approach. It's a function of your mindset to be free. And in all fairness, if you look at the 20 biggest internet companies on the planet, you know, 18 are in the United States and 2 are in China, and regrettably currently none are in Europe. And I think that's not a question because Europe doesn't have technology. We have fantastic technology.
Right.
It's a question of our risk appetite in Europe. And we say, let's give it a chance. Let's be fair. Let's be transparent. Let's give it a try. And I think that is something that, you know, the West Coast has ahead of us.
Doing a little risk-taking here in our podcast as well is moving over to the second part of our podcast, which is our Bavarian beer garden break, because even right now during COVID, when there's no Oktoberfest, since we are a Bavarian conference, we want to bring at least some of the Oktoberfest spirit to this podcast, even virtually. So this is a part where we enjoy a virtual sip of good old Bavarian beer. So what do we drink to?
What do you drink to? Well, I'm going to say I like this approach a lot because I must admit I don't drink beer and
okay.
I never have. So I'm not an expert in this topic, but I definitely drink to something virtually with you. What you drink to is this amazing dream of creating a more sustainable world. And I say this, you know, with utmost optimism and happiness, because it's not about imposing values. It's not about patronizing. It's not about telling people they have to be vegetarian and drive an electric car and all this stuff. That's not about it.
Mm-hmm.
A change of mindset where, you know, some of the most sustainable people I've ever met in my life, they don't even know that they are because it's just the way how they think and behave. Honest, decent, upright people who just behave rationally. Why waste consume? Why you know, waste stuff that, you know, resources just because you can afford it? You know, why, you know,
Right. Print
something that you are not. And this is a beautiful change that I wholeheartedly support. And I can't wait to see this working out. And
so cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
If you could have a drink or a water or a coffee at Oktoberfest, whatever you're drinking, and with any person, dead or alive, who would that be?
Oh my lord, that is. Yeah, I'm not sure I want to have a drink with dead people, but it would be with my family. To be honest, they are the center of my life, and I'm happy with them. Hopefully, they're happy with me. And I know it's not the question you want to hear, or the answer you want to hear, rather. but I'll give you a nice one. It's got to be Elon Musk, I guess. Or
Elon Musk, okay.
I guess so. Or Mr. Bezos.
Okay. Fair enough. You were born in Cairo, grew up in Germany as well as in Switzerland, and you worked in traditional investment banking at UBS Morgan Stanley as well as Barclays before you started your current company. How has your banking experience shaped your view as an investor today?
My banking experience has been basically a place where I learned my skill set. I don't think I'm emotionally very attached to it, but I don't want to talk badly about an industry that has basically fed me and supported me for many years. But it's just this deep feeling that it will be disrupted. It is in need of change. The way that we operate is mainly a banking model of the last 100 years. Like the car industry is basically conventional engines are 100 years old. And the new world will be different. In my mind, the biggest banks in 5 years will be Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, and none of the conventional names anymore.
You know, talking about progress and innovation, I think this is something that's very close to what the goal that you are working towards with Arabesque. Even though we've made a lot of progress in technology, some of our most important issues in the world are not really figured out so far and tackled so far. Providing, for example, clean energy or solving severe health issues, as we can see today with the coronavirus crisis. How do you look at the pace of innovation, and what do you think is needed from the entrepreneurial ecosystem to speed up the pace of innovation?
I don't think it's a question of technology or understanding. It's a question of implementation. Are people prepared to accept it, to make a difference? And obviously, as we're living through Corona days, we have learned that if it's imposed on us, we can manage without flying so much or traveling so much, and we find different ways to deal with it and get on with it. But the real game changer, in my opinion, is not going to be policy or politics or media or what I mentioned at the beginning. You need an efficient instrument to allow people to take different choices. And that instrument is finance. That's what I love about this. That's why I created Arabesque as a finance company. Is once people take decisions, finance decisions, and they can consider sustainability, they don't have to do it. They can choose whatever they want to, but they can. That is a game changer. And that will allow it to spread like a wildfire. That will change everybody's decision. Because if you think about it, we as, what about 7 billion people on this planet, we all take financial decisions every single day into consideration. We just buy some bread or we choose a service or whatever we do. It's always a finance transaction that is behind it.
Right.
You can recalibrate that finance element. That is the most powerful instrument that we have as a society to tackle the challenge.
And what do you think is the responsibility of entrepreneurs to make the world a better place? Since, you know, we have many entrepreneurs in the audience of this podcast.
That's exactly right, is to find a gap in the market that you can fill, a service or product that is needed, that is wanted, that you believe in, that you can develop. And that will allow you to grow. People will be happy to pay for something that makes their life either easier or more efficient or more sustainable. And just go for that and develop it and do it. And that's what I think everybody from us can contribute.
Coming to the next part of our podcast, which is our Bits and Pretzels toolbox, where our guests share their top tips for founders and entrepreneurs with our listeners. So what are your three tools that you would recommend to everyone and every entrepreneur in the audience today?
Number one.
So one is always financial transparency. Most companies go bust because they run out of money. And that's just the reality of life. Your idea might be amazing and your work might be excellent, but if you run out of money, that's the end of it. And so just to calculate very, very carefully how you spend your money is just one important thing.
Number two.
And the next thing is to focus, to only produce something really well and don't get distracted. Don't chase everything that moves.
Number three.
Thirdly, it's the quality of a team. And I'm not saying everybody has to be, you know, Einstein. What I'm saying is that, you know, you've got to be happy with these people. I mean, they've got to be good and they've got to be working together as a team. But you have to be happy with this team because you see them every day. And if you don't like each other, you know, we'll stop making your life not so happy.
Coming to our either-or game right now, and this is how it works. I give you two words, and you have to choose one real quick and tell me why you've made that choice. And the first one is bits or pretzels?
Pretzels. Because I like the taste.
Nerd or extrovert?
Oh, Lord. Nerd. Because I like people who talk too much.
Numbers or ideas?
Ideas. Innovation and creation is just the most beautiful thing.
Adapt or rebel?
Of course, rebel. Boring otherwise.
Speaking or listening?
Listening. Because that's how you learn.
Conquer or compromise?
Compromise. I'm a not aggressive person.
Chaos or order?
Absolute chaos. That's where innovation happens.
Singing in the shower or in the car?
In the shower. Because I'm more likely to be alone in the shower than in a car.
Tradition or transition?
Transition. Because it's about the move. It's about the pathway. It's not about where you came from.
Follow or lead?
Oh, that's weird. That's a lose-lose one. Can I skip this one or do I have to answer?
Obviously have to answer.
Okay, fine. I guess because of my role, I have to lead. if I would say follow, I would just, you know, disqualify myself now. But sometimes it's nice to follow as well. But I stick with lead.
Spending or saving, which is obviously an interesting question to an investor.
Yeah, so I'm a frugal guy. I like saving, but I will have to go for spending because that's what I have to do every day.
Umar Salim, thank you so much for coming on the Bits and Pretzels podcast today.
Thank you so much, Britta. It's a pleasure being with you.